You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our third and final hour on this Thursday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. In case you joined us late, in hour number one, we were joined by InfoWars reporter Joe Biggs, who was reporting live from Dallas at the Trump rally in Dallas, Texas. That was just a fantastic interview, so definitely go back and check that out. And in hour two, last hour, and through this hour and the rest of the show, we have John Robertson with us. He is the Hollywood Insider, our original Hollywood Insider, who is now doing a number of things, including giving speeches at prophecy conferences, started a radio show, Brothers on the Wall, as well as writing a book. And he is with us to talk about issues of faith and spirituality to some current events and things we see going on in our world today. I'm going to turn it over to you, John.
Well, Joe, thank you so much. And folks, you know, thank you for spending time with us here this evening. Joe and I and Doug and I sometimes talk about it off air, and we know how valuable your time is. And I just wanted to say thank you for taking the few moments that you do to join us, you know, and thank you for your emails and especially for your prayers. You know, folks, there are days where I can feel the prayers. I mean, I can feel them. Like, there are days where I have... It's a good thing Jesus said faith of a mustard seed, because there's days where that's about all I've got. But I feel those prayers, Joe. I can feel them, you know? And thank you, Joe, for mentioning Brothers on the Wall. I'll just touch on that quickly for folks who are just tuning in. God is good, and we have launched a new show. My co-host Mike and I, that's Mike, who's the co-director of Hear the Watchman. Be sure to check out Hear the Watchman, by the way, hearthewatchman.com. But we started a new show Saturday nights on Blog Talk Radio in our good friend and super warrior for Christ, Brother Marcus's old-time slot. And God bless you, Brother Marcus and Curtis. Brothers on the Wall, where we bring community watchmen up on the wall. We bring names that you folks are very well familiar with, Pastor David Langford, L.A. Marzulli, Josh Tolley. We're going to be bringing John B. Wells up on the wall here pretty quick. But we are also bringing brand new voices up on the wall, people who are checking in from all over the country and even all over the world, who are starting Bible studies, who are taking that extra plate of food to the elderly person across the street, who are taking an extra hour on their Saturday to mow the single mom's lawn because she's working and living paycheck to paycheck, barely making it. So if you're a community watchman, we want you with us up on the wall, folks. That's Brothers on the Wall on Blog Talk Radio, Saturday evenings, 7 o'clock Eastern, brothersonthewall.com. And you can email either Mike or myself at info@brothersonthewall.com. And if you're writing, speaking, doing podcasts, involved in your church, if you are out there being a difference maker, email us. We want to hear from you, info@brothersonthewall.com. Folks, Joe and I are going to shift gears and talk a little bit about current events in the third hour, but I am going to hit Joe with a surprise question, and he does not know what it is, but I was thinking about this a little earlier, Joe. Take a moment, if you would, indulge me and the listeners. Joe, if you had, I don't know, let's say 10 minutes of just you and Trump in a room, cup of coffee, feet up on the coffee table, just you and Trump, and he looked at you and said, Joe, I've been listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. I really appreciate you and your dad's work and the people that come on and the guests that call in. I'm not exactly sure what to do right now. What advice do you have for me? Joe Hagman, what would you give us some bullet points. What would you, how would you instruct Donald Trump if you had his ear?
Wow. yeah, you were right, John. That is a definitely a surprise question. What would I say to Donald Trump to influence him? I would ask him or tell him that, you know, as a Christian nation, as people say, we are founded as a Christian nation, and he wants to make America great again, based on his campaign slogan, Making America Great Again. Well, what made America great in the first place? And that was the people, the citizens of this nation, who, you know, in for the majority of this nation's history, and the majority of the population were Bible-believing Christians. And we see all the technological changes that have happened, all the progress, the liberal, you know, progress that's been made, the communism, the fascism, the democracy, the things that have come in and infected our society. I would tell him to go back to the basics, to stop the restrictions on religion, for instance, in schools. Number one, you know, abortions. You know, we have to end the innocent, the slaughtering of innocent children on a daily basis, in any basis. That would be number one. And then two, I would tell him to get in his Bible, to get a small team of true Bible believing pastors as counsel, and to ask the Lord for what he wants Donald to do with the country. Because I don't think any human really, I mean, when we talk about the powers of the world, the political powers, economic powers of the world, behind that veil of power is always a spiritual power or principality. And it's either one of two ways. It's either evil or it's of the Lord. And when we understand and realize that these spiritual powers and principalities are what really drives and controls the people, thoughts, and ways of the world, then we can get to the root of the problem. But if people, presidential candidates, presidents, any politician or leader in any capacity refuses to accept the Lord's existence, it's not going to work right. We have to get back to the basics. We have to get back to what the Lord laid out for us, like it says in Isaiah 29, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. And that would be my advice for Trump.
You know what? Precept upon precept, line upon line, Isaiah 29, folks, you heard it. A great answer, Joe. And sorry for doing that to you, but I thought it would probably make a pretty good answer. And I know you want to jump into some current events and chat a little bit about that. So what have you got, Joe?
Well, I want to ask you, John, what would you talk to Trump about? And no, I'm kidding. We can get into the current events. In all seriousness, I wanted to talk to you and get your take on what happened in Orlando. We had two shooting incidents on Saturday. There was a singer from The Voice, which, you know, these are unrelated apparently, but it's very odd. A fan shot the singer in the head in a concert in Orlando on Saturday night. And then we had this massacre at this homosexual bar called The Pulse in Orlando, Florida. Now, I've lived in our relatively small city my whole life. I've had the opportunity to travel to bigger cities, but never lived in a big city. And, you know, we don't have too many homosexual clubs around here. We don't have the violence like the big cities do. I mean, we do, but it's just in much smaller pockets. I just, you know, what do you make of this Omar Mateen? All the information we've seen about him, his wife now, who knew about the crimes before it happened, is apparently missing. The FBI meeting with him three separate times, the precursors from Disney calling the police to the gun manufacturer, gun shops calling the police days before the attack as he tried to buy body armor and guns. It seems like all the things were in place to catch this shooter before he carried out his act of violence, yet it still was not acted on, even though the FBI had knowledge. And it has come out, he was a G4S employee that is a contracting company under the Department of Homeland Security. And there's just a lot of weird stuff about this story that is bothering me. And, you know, people are calling it a hoax, a false flag. We see that every time these shootings happen. And that's because there really is a disconnect of facts from the mainstream media given to the people. And they refuse to cover the truth and inconsistencies because there's always an agenda behind these things. Never let a good crisis go to waste. But what do you see from this shooting? Do you think this was some kind of... Because in my mind, you know, we also hear rumors that this guy might have been a homosexual himself, had homosexual apps on his phone and other tendencies leaning toward that way. So you wonder if it's somebody who hated his own way of life or own behavior versus somebody who was a terrorist sympathizer, you know, calling the police department or calling the news agency right before he did it and claiming or giving his allegiance to ISIS. To me, that, you know, does that mean he was a part of ISIS if he had no direct contact with them or just decided to go do this and then call and basically give credit to them for this? And that goes into the projection of ISIS's power versus their actual power. But what do you make of all this?
Well, you know what? Let's take this on. Thank you, Joe. And let's define this and just do a broad stroke analysis on three levels, folks. Let's take the questions that Joe posed, and let's look at them on a spiritual level, let's look at them on a tactical level, and then let's push them through the lens of Hollywood, and I will use my expertise, having worked 16 years in Hollywood, to perhaps, maybe not shine some light on the story, but point out a few oddities per an email that I sent to Doug early Sunday morning. By the way, folks, I will redirect you in your free time back to the Hagman and Hagman archives. Doug and Joe took time out of their schedules and away from their family Sunday evening to go live and address this, and that was a fine effort, by the way, Joe. But let's take a look at this. Spiritually, tactically, and with a Hollywood perspective, spiritually, I believe that there is possibly a very large story here in the sense that first we had the singer, Grimmie, cute young girl, 20 years old, star of The Voice. I will mention quickly, folks, that I've worked next to The Voice at both Warner Brothers during its first season and over at Universal during subsequent seasons. I never worked on the show, but interestingly, on Pretty Little Liars, I worked right next to their stage at Warner Brothers, and on a single-season show with Katherine Heigl called State of Affairs at Universal, I worked next to The Voice stage there. So a little bit of a connection there. But this poor young lady, she gets shot in the head. It kind of had that sort of John Hinckley kind of feel to it, or Mark David Chapman, the assassin of John Lennon. But when I saw that news item, Joe, the only thing I thought, and consider this, folks, the only thing I thought after I said, my goodness, what a shame, was I hope she was saved. I hope she was under the blood. And praise God, it turns out that not only was she saved, but she was a very vocal and articulate follower of Christ, disciple of Christ even. So God bless her soul. Following evening, Pulse Nightclub, Orlando, 320-some-odd people, I believe, in this nightclub. Having lived in San Francisco and Hollywood, coming up through the restaurant and bar business and then into the entertainment business, I have had acquaintances and friends to a degree who are homosexual, both men and women, on and off through the years. And an environment like Pulse, Joe, is just an environment so antithetical to the idea of somebody coming in and shooting the place up. I talked to Sergeant Tim, and folks, Sergeant Tim is the editor of Outlaw Patriot News. Check that out if you like. That's where we post all of our original articles. But anyway, I talked to Sergeant Tim for a military perspective, 19 years active duty down in Texas, and he made a couple of points about some tactical issues, and I made one about... Am I still on?
Yeah, you. I heard you say I made one about, and then it cut out for a second there.
Bear with us, folks. This is live radio, but I was speaking to Sergeant Tim, and he made a few tactical observations, and I made a speculate. I speculated about a spiritual possibility, and this was on Sunday afternoon. And I said, you know, I have a funny feeling that this guy may have been a closeted homosexual or somebody dealing with same-sex attraction, same-sex tendencies, what have you. Again, I'm out on a speculative branch right now, but since we already are out on that branch, I would even suggest that there is a possibility that he could be a victim of SRA, satanic ritual abuse, or he could be a victim of MKUltra-type personality splitting. He's got a very military look and a very military bearing about him. I have a lot of military friends from working with American Survival Wholesale these many years, and a lot of my military buddies checked in and basically said, look, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, we know one another when we see each other, in uniform or out, and this guy's got a very military bearing. So is it possible that perhaps some form of homosexual abuse was placed upon this person at a younger age? Now you've got a walking civil war, a combination G.I. Joe and somebody fighting this terrible same-sex attraction. And when you add to that this Muslim faith, to whatever degree he was practicing, you know, professing death upon homosexuals. So you've got a ticking time bomb. You've got somebody who's capable and somebody who is full of self-hatred, and consider this, folks, wants to kill the part of them that they hate. Again, I'm out on a thin branch of speculation. Let's roll that back a little bit and speak tactically for a moment. I know a lot of Hagman and Hagman listeners are pro-Second Amendment people, and I know many of our brothers and sisters in Christ are from a little more passive point of view, and that's fine as well. I myself, personally, Joe and Hagman family, I am a pro-Second Amendment guy. I own guns. You're not taking my guns. So I've been shooting for 20 years. I'm pretty familiar with most of the major platforms in long guns and handguns. And one thing I would encourage listeners to really think about, okay, it is understood that in special forces, okay, Army, Marine Corps, etc., that a number of rounds fired to hit ratio and number of rounds fired to kill ratio is about 5-1 or 4-1. So what that means, folks, is for every 4 rounds you put through a weapon, you're going to get a hit. And especially if it's with a long gun, most of those hits, or many of them, will in fact be kill shots because the bullets are larger. 4-1 or 5-1. Now, that's a highly trained special operator. Those are the guys that were in Benghazi. Those are Navy SEAL Team 6. Those are the guys that were in the movie 13 Hours, okay? Special operators. Civilians who are trained, civilians who have been to the firearms courses, they tend to run a 9-1 or a 10-1 shots fired to hit ratio. Okay, so what does that mean? It means that this guy would have had to carry in an enormous load of ammo. Now, they're saying he was using an AR-15 style long gun. He was actually using a Sig Sauer long gun. Mm-hmm. However, mm-hmm. It shoots the same caliber ammo that the military M4 or its predecessor, the M16, fires.
It shoots multiple.
Which is a NATO 5.56 or a Remington 223. Folks, it's a big bullet out of a rifle. Imagine this.
It shoots multiple. It shoots, from what I understand, it shoots at least 4 different caliber of bullets.
The primary platform, just real quick, the M16 was developed by Colt in the late 50s. to fire what they call 5.56 millimeter NATO. When you convert that to the American quote-unquote standard measurement system, that would be a 223 caliber Remington. And you can switch barrels out, and you can. There are methods whereby you can shoot different ammo, but basically it's one of two rounds, a 5.56 millimeter NATO or 223 caliber Remington. But here's what I really want listeners to think about. The number of rounds at a 10-to-1 rounds fired versus hit ratio, and this is, again, a trained civilian, not somebody who just picked up the weapon for the first time. He would be walking into that nightclub. This is where I have a problem, Joe, and I'll bounce this off you. He would be walking into that nightclub where it has been stated by many witnesses he was well-known and had been many times before with an enormous number of magazines loaded with bullets. Now, for those of you who don't shoot, ammo is heavy. The standard magazine for that long gun platform is a 30-round box mag, okay? When that's full of ammo, it's heavy. This guy would have literally been sneaking into a club, Joe, with what would be the equivalent of about 6 or 7 bricks under his leather jacket or his jacket. Plus, where's he going to put the long gun? I mean, it's been stated all across mainstream media that there was an off-duty Orlando police officer running security. Folks, how did he get, you know, 1,000-plus rounds of ammo into this gay club? And how did he get a long gun that measures minimum 30-plus inches in there as well? It just doesn't make sense. Joe, I'll hand it back to you, and then we can talk a little bit about the Hollywood perspective.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It doesn't make sense. Unless he was to start the shooting from outside and working his way in, but there are conflicting reports. Some say that he came in through the front door and then started shooting afterwards. Some say he came in through a side door and started shooting. But no, the amount of damage that was done, the from one person and the amount of time that he was in there, there is missing time from the police scanner, 3 hours that you actually have to buy through Broadcastify, subscribe to their service, and you can get those 3 hours. But he was in there for a long time without any intervention from the cops. And you know, as I said earlier, there was multiple reports of multiple shooters, including a woman being involved. And since we can move to the Hollywood side of this, I want to ask you about crisis actors. I've been, you know, hearing a lot about what these people are, that these are people who are involved in drills, who play a role of victim or terrorist in order to better prepare emergency response personnel and law enforcement agencies to train for disasters. But there seems to be an overlap with a lot of these actual live shootings and crisis actors. What in Hollywood, in your capacity, if any, have you come across the crisis actors?
Well, that's an excellent question, Joe. Thank you. And to answer that, we're going to have to examine three of these quote-unquote mass casualty events. I like to give the Hagman listeners resources. Doug and Joe and myself, we like to put tools in your toolbox. So grab a pen or pencil and write this down. You need to go on a search engine. We like StartPage. Because it's more private, and type in capstone event. That's capstone, C-A-P, stone, event. And you can also type in MCE, that's mass casualty event. Those searches, folks, will enable you to increase your level of understanding of what we're talking about right now. That being said, crisis actors, okay, who are they, what are they, and how do they play into this? The first thing I would point out is that there is some very sloppy strategizing with these crisis actors. I'm speaking of the overlap of the incident at the quote-unquote incident at Sandy Hook and the incident in 2014 in Boston. It has been taken down, but fortunately people downloaded it and it has been reposted. But Don Hochstrom, the supposed principal of Sandy Hook, was interviewed by mainstream media on the street outside the Boston bombing. What are the chances? Same lady, no question about it. We have the technology now, folks, to do facial recognition scanning where they measure things like the distance between your earlobes, and they can measure the finite space in the gaps in your teeth. So when I say it's Dawn Hochstrom in the picture, that may or may not be her name, but it is the same human being. Also, what was his name? Noah, Noah Podstrom, I believe, the little boy who was supposedly a victim of Sandy Hook, popped up with his picture all over a wall in Pakistan in late 2014, early 2015, as a victim of a supposed mass casualty event in, I believe it was Islamabad, Pakistan. So in Hollywood, folks, we have an infrastructure that is the same as the military, okay? From the executive producer to the director to the script supervisor is in charge of continuity across the board, to the on-set dresser, who is in charge of continuity of all of the sets and the atmosphere and the environment, to the prop master, who's in charge of continuity with all of the props. There are many, many very well-paid and highly skilled people whose job it is to make sure that in Hollywood productions they don't make these silly mistakes, like using the same background player from one scene to the next so that people, when they're watching the movie, catch it. And interestingly, Joe and Hagman listeners, since I've been working in Hollywood, many, many people have said over the years that the thing that drives them crazy the most is when an actor's smoking a cigarette in a scene and then when they cut back to him, he's not. Or when there's a lit candle on the table and when they cut back to that point of view, the candle's not there. It drives people nuts. So we have an infrastructure, a pre-existing infrastructure that is designed and very highly trained and very well paid. You know, these people make six figures to prevent this type of thing from happening. Now, let's go back to the tragedy last Saturday night, Sunday morning in Orlando at the Pulse nightclub. Crisis actors. There's a couple of ways that you can tell that people essentially don't know what they're doing. In Hollywood, background actors, okay, what they used to call dress extras or extras, often do what's called an A to B. And an A to B is simply when the second AD, that's the second assistant director, they are the person who run the background players, they will position background at point A. And at a given moment in the scene, it is that background player's job to walk from point A to point B. The camera will catch a piece of that, and it creates organic livelihood in the background as the scene unfolds. Skilled background actors know that they know how to conduct themselves. They know how to comport themselves when they're on camera. They will stop and look at their watch. They will pick a piece of lint off their trousers. They will snap their head around and look at something real quick and then look back. They know, Joe, they learn over years how to present themselves in an organic manner. They may scratch their head or move their hand across their eyebrow or something like that. Crisis actors inevitably are doing specifically and solely the only action they've been told to do. If they say, pick up this body and move it from point A to point B, you never see them doing anything other than 100% focus on that task. That's one way that you can nail them. Another way is there's almost always somebody when they're a crisis actor crisis actors are like one step beneath, like, you know, suburban dinner theater. And no offense to any aspiring thespians out there, but they have this weird thing where they want to look at the camera, and they often do. Now, they may not put their eyes directly into the lens point of view, but they have this weird, I don't know if it's ego or what it is, where they want to look at the camera. The other thing I would mention when you look at these potential crisis actors, I'm thinking of the Boston Marathon incident as well as the incident at Pulse in Orlando. They move in ways that human beings don't move. One of the things I saw in alternative media yesterday is four or five people carrying a quote-unquote victim across the parking lot, but the victim is stiff as a board, as though they're using all their abdominal muscles and core strength to maintain a prone posture that is parallel to the ground. Now, any victim that suffered any kind of trauma is going to be carried like a sack of potatoes. They're going to slump in the middle. You're going to have them 4-point carry or whatever, and they're going to have, you know, they're going to have their butt dragging just above the ground. That's what it really looks like. Folks, go on one of your search engines and look at some of the trauma scenes from terrorist acts that have occurred in Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, Haifa, etc. Those are the real deal. Then go back and look at Orlando and look at the Boston bombing. The other thing, Joe, and I'll hand it back to you, is this. Folks, having lived in Los Angeles, I've seen some terrible car accidents in my life. And I also saw, when I was a younger man, I saw an off-duty police officer shoot an assailant right in the neck. And then he shot him twice more when he was on the ground. when trauma like that, when gunshot wounds, severe automobile accidents, and Doug could attest to this as well, when those occur, folks, there is an enormous amount of EMT and paramedic detritus all over the ground. They work so fast and so hard to preserve life. They're going through what's called triage so quickly. They're determining, they're making life and death determinations on a split second. They are ripping open packages of Curlix, blood clot, Israeli battle bandages, tubing, IVs, catheters. They'll do tracheotomies right there if that's going to keep the person alive. It creates an enormous amount of litter. Stop and think about this, Hagman family. When you cut your finger and you go into the bathroom to just put on a simple Band-Aid, how many little pieces of scrap are all over the bathroom counter just because you cut your finger? This is a mass casualty event, a capstone event. Remember that term. 53 hospitalized, 49 dead. The shooter makes number 50. Folks, there would be litter ankle deep from the paramedics working furiously to triage people and to save lives. And lastly, when you look at triage incidents, and I've dressed many of them in Hollywood. I worked on the show Providence, which was a big hospital show. I worked on Alias, The Agency. I worked on the hospital show Hawthorne. I've been around triage sets a lot. They always have a command post, and they have four colored tarps. Those four colored tarps are black, green, red, or kind of an orangish color, and white. Those four colored tarps, Joe, and Hagman listeners, are a quick way for the emergency service people to determine the severity of somebody's wound. Okay, massive gunshot wound, abdominal chest wound, sucking wound, a head shot, a neck shot, a femoral artery bleeding all over the place. They go on a specific colored tarp because they must be evacuated and get into a trauma center immediately or they will die. Somebody who's, you know, got whiplash and sprained their ankle and some cuts and bruises, they're going to be over on a different colored tarp. Again, look at the exterior of the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. Where is the litter? Where is the blood? Where are the triage tarps? Joe, I know I got long-winded. I'll pass it back to you.
No, that was fantastic, John. That's a segment I am going to go back and re-listen to, as I did take some notes, but I couldn't get it all. You pointed out a number of interesting. You made a number of interesting points that about these shooting events, the triage aspect of it, and that's something I never thought about. You know, like you said, the litter, the waste that would be left laying around from having emergency medical personnel treating seriously wounded people right there on the scenes, like you said, you know. Trachs had to be done. People have to have their wounds closed up in order to be transported. You know, their arteries shut from stopped from bleeding. There is, you know, so much that it takes to do that for each person. You know, each individual injury, and that's something that you don't see. And the crisis actors comparing actual terrorist attacks or casualty events that we know are real that have happened versus the mannerisms of people in these other attacks that we see that people call false flags. Doing that and comparing those, that would be a huge advantage because I see people throwing out videos now about, you know, green screens being used in the interviews for family members of this disaster. And, you know, I don't know if we'll ever really get to the bottom of this on this side of you know, before Jesus returns, getting to the truth of the matter when it comes to these mass casualty issues, whether they're, you know, in what regards are they hoax, are they hoaxes if they are. But there is definitely something not right when it comes to these, you know, these mass shooting events and terrorist attacks because, I mean, each one, you know, you see more and more inconsistencies pointed out. And it's hard to argue sometimes, especially when you go back and look at Sandy Hook. There were, 24 children that were said to be killed. And nobody wants to sit there and say that, oh, you know, that you guys are a liar. Nobody died, because it doesn't have to be, completely fabricated to be a false flag. You know, people do die in false flags. The false flag doesn't mean it was a fake hoax attack. It means that it was done with intentions and purposes that were different from what would be presented as the actual motivation. But, John, what do you think of this? This was from the Daily Caller yesterday. DHS Secretary, right-wingers pose same threat as Islamic extremists. Not only that article, but there was another article. Here it is. And it was the LGBT blames Christians for Orlando attacks. How can the media get away with, you know, posting this nonsense? And not only, I mean, they get away with posting it, people believe it. Are we that
brainwashed? Well, Jesus gave us an answer to that in one of the first chapters of John. They are of their father, the devil. Joe, I appreciate that question, and I will say this directly to the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson. You, sir, are a stooge. And that is my comment on that. I would like to get Mr. Johnson to interview our fallen brother, Lavoie Finicum, and let's talk to him about who's murdering who and who's responsible for what in these varied circumstances. Now, I personally, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but I personally agreed with the occurrence at the Bundy Ranch. I felt that those people had a right to defend their property and their lives. The Malheur Reservation, I felt like that was taking it a step too far. On Caravan to Midnight, I compared it to when the South, during the Civil War, invaded Pennsylvania. And for those of you who aren't too up on your Civil War history, the South won every battle in the first 2 years. The Civil War began to turn, the tide began to turn over a single crucial event, and it occurred in Pennsylvania, and it occurred in the town of Gettysburg. The South should have never crossed the Mason-Dixon line, because they never recovered from that. And I think that's what happened with Lavoie Finicum and his party up at that refuge, taking weapons and ammo and women and children up into a federal property. Me personally, I believe everything they say about the constitutional rights. I understand we're under laws of admiralty, et cetera. I don't want to go too far with this. But I think they made a mistake doing that. Okay, they made a mistake. That's just my opinion.
I agree with you.
I still don't want them locked up. Thank you for that, Joe. Now back to the original question, which is Secretary of Homeland Security making this comment. Folks, this is where you really have to pray for discernment, because I made this analogy the other night on air. If you have to untie a big wet rope that's got so many knots in it, it just looks like a bunch of pretzels hanging out together, what do you have to do to untie that rope? You have to grasp one end and begin working that end through the business end to get the knot untied. And no matter how big the knot is, as long as you work that end, eventually you will untie the knot. I would submit to the Hagman listeners tonight, Joe, that the mainstream media has become so corrupted, it has become so bought and paid for. Folks, listen to me. I am from Hollywood. You can seat around anybody's kitchenette dining room table the men who make the decisions in this country. I don't care if you're watching MSNBC, Fox, CNN, etc. I'm talking Ted Turner. I'm talking Rupert Murdoch. I'm talking the Salzburg family. I'm talking the CEO of GE. I'm talking the CEO of Disney. And I'm talking the Sumner Redstone people. Boom. I just laid it out for you. Those are the people who are giving you your talking points around the water cooler. So, folks, listen. Be a faithful child of God. Don't be a parrot, okay? Don't listen to what Megyn Kelly says, or even, God bless him, don't listen to what Sean Hannity says, and then turn around the next day and regurgitate it as though it's your own thought. Because it isn't. You're just parroting what the powers that be, and trust me, these exist. You know, you hear often on these shows, oh, there's no such thing as a star chamber. Well, there may not be, but there is a such thing as the top floor of the Disney Tower and the ABC Tower, and there's a such thing as the top floors at Rockefeller Center. And I will tell you what goes on in those top floors is the manipulation of the people's minds. Now, back to this Secretary of Homeland Security. When they were searching for that that Zarnoff brother, the second one that they found in the boat, I heard a regular citizen make a comment on InfoWars, and I'll paraphrase it. He said, you know, if this were 100 years ago, the police would be inside our homes, we'd be feeding them, making them coffee, and we, all of us, would be out with our weapons searching for this criminal and bringing them to justice. Now, I'm not a proponent of taking a Wild West mentality, folks, but I will tell you this. I'm borrowing this from Alex Jones. Hitler took the guns. Hugo Chavez took the guns. Pol Pot took the guns. Mao Zedong took the guns. Okay? You see a pattern here? They try to disarm you so that you are impotent to defend your family, to defend your faith, and to defend the defenseless around you. And that is what they're trying to do. I hope, Joe, that 50 people didn't lose their lives in Orlando. I hope that if, in fact, 50 people did, that many of them, maybe they were struggling with same-sex tendencies, maybe they were living a full-blown homosexual lifestyle. God is a God of forgiveness, and I'm not a proponent of that, but I also believe that we shouldn't stand in the ultimate judgment of someone's soul. I hope that many of them knew Christ to one degree or another. That is my most sincere hope. But folks, you need to pay attention to this, and Joe, I'll hand it back to you. You need to pay attention. These are pitiful, staged events that would never pass muster in even the cheapest no-budge Hollywood show, the most cheesy, non-union, $2 million straight-to-video piece of junk. These would never make it to post-production because they look ridiculous. Joe, you made a comment quickly about green screens. I've read that stuff about Sandy Hook. Look at the details, folks. Why is it on that day, what, a few days before Christmas, in Connecticut, nobody's wearing green? But oh-ho, the next night on Anderson Cooper, green was Vicky's favorite color. We're all wearing green to celebrate Vicky. Well, there you go. They realize their mistake, and then they overcorrect it. It's also something that happens in Hollywood from time to time. Look at the details. Look at that school at Sandy Hook. There were three-foot-high weeds in the flower beds around the playground and the access and egress doors. Now, it was mid to late December. School's been in since September. Don't you think all those little munchkins would have trampled those weeds flat and buried them in the mud during recess over the course of 3 months, folks? Yeah, that's exactly what would have happened. You would not have brown, winterized stalks of weeds that are knee-high to these little elementary school kids. They would have all been trampled. They wouldn't be there, but they are there, and that's a problem. And that list goes on and on. I don't want to take up too much more time. Joe, I'll hand it back to you.
Fantastic analysis, John. Just right on the money with everything that you're talking about. Let's talk about the... if we can, we only got about 10 minutes left here. We see what the president, I don't know if you saw his speech, I think it was yesterday, where he looked really angry and he was talking about the term radical Islam. We're getting reports that Obama is blocking terrorist probes. We know that the Orlando shooter had Disney call the police on him, had interviews by the FBI, had a gun dealership call the FBI on this man. The see something, say something. It seems like the citizens did their job. The gun companies did their job here. And yet there was still a hole in the security, in the follow through or whatever it was. It seems like they did everything right. At least the people who observed this man and his behavior, by contacting the authorities, by recognizing that there was something wrong. Yet it still fell through the cracks. Now, not recognizing this radical Islam threat, and I want to tie this back into Christianity if we can. Do you see a possible way? Because and you're working in Hollywood, I know the imaginations there just have to be off the charts in some cases, because of just the amount of shows and different ideas that are put out on a daily basis from Hollywood, from the movies to the TV sets. Do you see with the economy, with the presidential election, with the climate of the country, and in your experience in Hollywood, in plots and setting up the perfect, as you were talking about earlier, the perfect sets and making sure the visuals are correct, making sure everything looks as accurate and as close to real life scenarios as possible. Do you see, is there a perfect storm brewing here? Is there would there be a better time to strike with an economic collapse, or a, nationwide disaster that would bring in some type of martial law? Are we in the, in that area of, now or never? Or do you think that that there's some more surprises down the road before we get to that point of no return?
Well, that's an excellent question, Joe, let me give you what I can here in the remaining minutes of the show this evening. Hollywood is one of the most omnipotent, powerful, well-moneyed machines in the history of humanity, okay? Is Hollywood the primary conditioning mechanism for the Luciferian agenda? Yes. Does Hollywood know that it is the primary conditioning mechanism for the Luciferian agenda? Yes. However, just like Washington, D.C., Hollywood is compartmentalized, and that is very powerful because the people who want to get further up the greased ladder that is Hollywood will ignore certain things. They'll turn a blind eye to certain things. I remember I talked about this. Folks, quickly, go back to the Hagman & Hagman Report archives, June 25th, 2015, October 9th, 2015. Two shows, Doug and Joe and myself, talking about Hollywood, and I go into a lot of this on those shows. Where are we at right now? Again, take it to prayer, folks, because the only way we're going to find that one end of this miasma of news weirdness, this big knot that we're looking at, is through the discernment that we can receive through Christ. Now, let's talk about this Muslim thing for a second. Albert Pike wrote a letter to Manzini, to Genovese Manzini, I believe, was, or Giuseppe Manzini. Started with a G, but his last name is Manzini. I know you know the letter, Joe. Do a search, folks. Again, start page is a good start because it's a little more anonymous. It separates your IP from your search, and their servers are in the Netherlands, and the Netherlands does not have a data sharing agreement with the United States. Go to start page and look up Albert Pike or Albert Pike's letter or Albert Pike Manzini. I believe that's M-A-Z-Z-I-N-I. In that letter, about 100 years ago, he outlined what the plan was, and the plan was simple. He outlined World War I to recreate national nation states away from monarchies. He outlined World War II to create the Cold War and the War of the East versus the West, and he outlined World War III. And World War III stood to use Islamic extremism, okay? Understand where these people come from. They come from an incredibly hot, arid land where there's no water, there's no jobs, there's oftentimes not enough food. You have an oppressed people who know not the redemption of Christ. They are rife to be sucked into Satan's masterpiece. Satan's masterpiece is the religion of Islam. Folks, this, if you're a Christian, this should make your heart weep. How many billions of good men and women have gone straight to hell because they were deceived under the big lie that is Islam? How many? How many? If you're a true Christian and you're under the blood, that should break your heart. Now, I'm not a big fan of the Muslims right now. We've got some serious problems. They are responsible for pretty much all of the terrorist acts around the world and these mass casualty events and these mass shootings. And what do? We try to be nice. We open up our borders. We open up our social welfare programs. And what do? They come in almost like agent provocateurs, and they start trouble. That's the bottom line. But as Christians, we need to realize that, yes, Hollywood is pumping your head full of lies. Okay, you can turn your TV off or even throw it away. I'm not saying you can't go to the movies, but use discernment. Go see what PureFlix is putting out. You can still go to the movies. But Hollywood, yes, it's pumping out a massive machination of lies. The boots on the ground are the Muslims. That's Satan's army that he's using to antagonize us, to confuse us, to make us angry, so that we start thinking in terms of bullets rather than thinking in terms of the Bible. And that's what's going down. Now, what do we need to do? We need to pray for these people and realize that they have a soul as much as anybody hearing my voice does. And I think that I have at least a reasonable enough understanding of hell. I don't want anybody going there. Nobody. So, you know, Joe, I'll hand it back to you, but folks, if you want to hear more about Hollywood, I talk about it a lot on Brothers on the Wall, Saturday night, 7 o'clock Eastern, brothersonthewall.com, and be sure to go to brothersonthewall.com or outlawpatriotnews.wordpress.com, because I have two articles up right now about Hollywood. One of them is The Evidence of Things Not Seen, HH Connections to Brothers on the Wall, It's a personal testimony about the journey that Jesus Christ has taken me on. The Hagmans are in that story prominently. And then the second article is called Hollywood, The Road In, The Road Out. And I'll make this my final comment, and I'll hand it back to you, Joe. Folks, you are in the fight of your life, okay? Sitting on the sidelines isn't going to work any longer. Like Doug says, you were born for this time. Like Brother Augusto Perez says, you need to get into your assigned seat. Like Steve Quayle says, there are no political solutions to spiritual problems. I need the Christian remnant to stop thinking they're going to go to a gunfight packing a squirt gun. Enough is enough. We need you on the Hagman and Hagman Report. We need you up on the wall. Many of you are familiar with the butterfly effect. It suggests that the flapping of a butterfly's wings on one side of the earth can create a tsunami on the other. Well, what can prayer do? What did Christ tell us, Joe, can be done with a single mustard seed of faith? So if you're building preps, and I highly recommend you do, get your water, get your food, get your guns and ammo, get your junk silver. But maybe the first thing that every single one of you listeners need to get tonight is that mustard seed of faith. Joe?
Amen. John, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight. You added tremendous insight into both some current events that are going on in our world today and to the spiritual side in your walk with Jesus and the things that he's leading you to do. Again, for folks out there, can you give the website name and the show name and time where people can listen to your new show, Brothers on the Wall?
Thank you, Joe. I will. Blog Talk Radio, Saturday evenings, every Saturday, 7 o'clock Eastern. That's 7 p.m. Eastern. Brothers on the Wall, brothersonthewall.com. We've got great articles up at outlawpatriotnews.wordpress.com. And lastly, folks, I would love to meet you, give you a hug, pray with you. I know it's hard. We're in tough financial times, but if you can make it out to Knoxville, I'll be there. September 30th through October 1st, and that is at Hear the Watchman, M-E-N, hearthewatchman.com. Folks, God bless each and every one of you. Stay strong, keep your heads on a swivel, and get in this fight with us. Joe, thank you so much. You know I love you, brother. God bless you.
Love you too, John. God bless you too, and look forward to listening to your shows and reading your articles, and especially your book, and we'll definitely have to continue to cross-promote the radio shows, and you just let us know any way we can help you, and we will definitely do that. Again, thanks for filling in, and you have a great night, John.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, brother, and God bless.
God bless you, too. That was, again, John Robertson of our Hollywood Insider, brothersonthewall.com. And folks, check out their new radio show Sunday or Saturday nights at 7 p.m. And John's working on a new book, and as he said, he'll be speaking at the Hear the Watchman conference in Knoxville, Tennessee, in September, September 30th, I believe. Go to hearthewatchman.com, and you can get all the information there. Tomorrow night, John McTiernan is our guest. If you want to check out some of his work, go to defendproclaimthefaith.org. defendproclaimthefaith.org. He has a lot going on his website. He's got his podcast up there. He's got articles, Bible verse of the day, his book, books, God's Final Warning to America, which is free on his website in PDF format, as well as his latest book, America Has Done to Israel, by John P. McTiernan. And he will be with us on tomorrow to talk about his perspective of the Orlando shootings, as well as the political jargoning that is taking place stemming from these shootings, and many other stories. You know, this whole week seems to be a big focus on what has happened in Orlando. And there are many things going on behind the scenes and under the radar as the coverage of Orlando is dominating all news, and rightfully so. It's a horrible thing. But one of the things, you know, they keep saying it's the worst mass shooting in the U.S. history. That is so far from correct. We don't have time to get into it now as we're in the last minutes. But again, if you joined us late, Joe Biggs is with us for hour one. John Robertson, hour two and three, he was with us, and it was a fantastic show. Go back and listen to Joe Biggs. Again, drop him a line. Go to his Twitter, Facebook, YouTube account. He's an InfoWars reporter. And let him know what you thought of the interview. We're definitely going to have him back. And again, tomorrow night, John McTiernan. And don't forget, next Tuesday, we are going to have Jack Cashill in studio as a guest with his new book, TWA Flight 800. Have a good night, everyone.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.